Welcome to Shoot First, Ask Questions Later, where we research the response of our past and review their relevance for today. This is your host, Moshe Kurtz. Welcome, my friends, to another episode of Shoot First, Ask Questions Later. Today, we are joined by Rabbi Dr. Tzvi Leshem, and we are going to be doing our first tshuva of the Minchas Elazar. In particular, a fan favorite, or at least it's a fan favorite for me, I perceive everyone else seems to be interested in it, is his landmark tshuva on justifying the practice of Hasidim, as well as many others nowadays, of dancing and clapping on Shabbos and Yontif. But before we jump in, Rabbi Dr. Tzvi Leshem was raised in the United States and made Aliyah in 1979. He was ordained by the Chief Rabbinate of Israel and received his PhD in Jewish philosophy from Bar-Ilan University. After serving as the Associate Dean of Nishmat and the Rabbi of Shirat Shlomo Congregation in Efrat, Rabbi Leshem became the Director of the Gershom Shalom Collection for Kabbalah and Hasidism, or Hasidus, at the National Library of Israel. And I believe a Mazel Tov is in order at the time of recording. I think it's about a week or so after your retirement from that capacity. So shkach for all your good work there. And I'm sure you're going to continue to be spreading Torah on this podcast and many forums. He is the author of Redemptions, Contemporary Hasidic Essays on the Parsha and the Festivals, as well as numerous scholarly rabbinic articles. He and his wife Julie reside in Yerushalayim. Now, I think it is evident already to our listeners from your very extensive bio, very impressive, that you have a love and a specialty in Hasidic literature. So it's no surprise, of course, that we are going to be doing a tshuva that is from a Hasidic author, but I'm curious if you could tell our audience, the first time we're doing a tshuva of the Minchas Elazar, tell us a little bit about the Munkacher, and tell us why you wanted to choose this as your subject of analysis to highlight the Hasidic approach to halacha.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Kurtz. The very first thing that I want to do is acknowledge my dear friend, Rabbi Dr. Levi Yitzchak Cooper, whose research on the Munkacher Rebbe has been very helpful for me in preparing for this discussion. So I want to first be Makir Tov. The Munkacher Rebbe was Rabbi Chaim Elazar Shapira, who lived from 1871 to 1937 and succeeded his father, the Darkei Tshuva, as the Av Beit Din of Munkach and the Rebbe of the Munkacher Hasidim in 1913. The Munkacher Hasidim, the Shapira family, are descendants of the Bnei Yisachar. And currently the Rebbe in Borough Park, the current Munkacher Rebbe, is the grandson of the Minchas Elazar. He was famous. He was both a Hasidic Rebbe through and through and a great posek and very prolific author. He's most famous, more than anything else, essentially for his radical extremism in opposition to anything smacking of modernity. Obviously, very anti-Zionist, very anti anything modern. He put the gymnasium, high school, Hebrew high school in Munkach and Cheram, and he was especially vehemently opposed to the Agudat Yisrael movement because, as you know, when people are ostensibly closer to you, you have to be more clear cut on your opposition so that people don't get confused. So he was very, very opposed to Aguda.
I'm actually very interested in that point because usually, I mean, I grew up in the more yeshiva shevel, but I find myself more situated in the mono-Orthodox community. So I always think of like, you know, maybe it's anachronistic. Nowadays, the Agudas Yisrael, the Moetzes Gedolei Torah, that's like, you know, you don't get more right-wing than, I mean, maybe the Tori Carter or something, but essentially you don't get more right-wing than that. So what, very briefly, I'm just curious, what were his objections to the Agudas Yisrael?
Well, I think he thought that they were soft on Zionism, relatively. Keep in mind, Aguda today, I think, in general, is a little bit more right-wing than it was in the very in the early 1900s. But in terms of putting it on the scale, the Munkach then was very, very close to what Satmar became today. So that's really the ideological niche that you're talking about, kind of, so to speak, to the left of Naturei Karta, but to the right of everyone else. So that's where you would place him, I think. By the way, I just want to mention that on YouTube, there's an amazing 10-minute video of Munkacs in 1933, including the wedding of the Munkacs Rebbe's son-in-law, Rabbi Boruch Rabinowitz, who succeeded him when he died in 1935, and was in a certain sense almost deposed after the Holocaust because of his seeming Zionism, and he ended up being chief rabbi of Cholon in Israel, and his son became the Rebbe in his stead, and is still the Rebbe.
Wow, that's like a scandal. You know, sometimes you hear, I think the on the opposite end, sometimes like Lifisher, Misnagdish, Rabbanim, on him, they would tear Kriya when their kids became Chassim. I think the Eger family that occurred. So it's funny to see it on the opposite end, so to speak.
Yes, there's a whole chapter on it in Professor Shmuel Heilman's book, Who Will Lead Us. He has a whole chapter on the Munkacs succession controversy, if you want to follow up on it. Wow. Personally, my connection, reason for interest in this tshuva is several. My father, Zichrono Livracha, grew up in a small village very near Munkacs. And even though his family was more aligned with Satmar for reasons which I won't get into now, but Munkacs was very much looming in the background as I was growing up. And about 6 years ago, with some of my kids, I traveled to Munkacs as part of a kind of roots trip. And we davened there, and there's still a daily minyan there, which is sort of run out of the Munkacs headquarters in Borough Park, where we daven and saw all the sites of what used to be a, you know, very, very powerful Jewish community, and now is only obviously a small remnant. So that's, I have that personal interest. And I, when I was a student at Columbia in the 1970s, I davened in the Munkacs Shtiebel in Borough Park many times when visiting Hasidic relatives. So I and saw the Rebbe, the current Rebbe, who at that time was a very, very young man. I just remember the first time I was there was on Sukkot, and he was the Chazan for Hallel, and I remember him crying, and I remember noticing that it was the first time that I ever saw someone cry when they were in davening. I didn't realize, you know, that it was such a powerful experience for people, as important for my education. That's one part. The other half is, as you alluded to in your introduction, that my background is Hasidic, both family-wise and in terms of my scholarship. And I was a rabbi of what could be called a neo-Hasidic shul for many years. And this tshuva about dancing on Shabbat, which, as you pointed out, is very common in Hasidic and neo-Hasidic circles, and no one thinks about it, everyone takes it for granted, therefore is significant to me in that context as well.
Right. He does open up talking about how nowadays we see Hasidim va'anshei Maisa who are dancing in Shabbos and Yontif. I mean, maybe just everyone, a lot of people nowadays consider themselves also Hasidim va'anshei Maisa. The dancing and clapping, you know, there's I think it got controversial on the very Misnagdisha and dancing for Karbach Shabbos. They found problems with the dancing. I think in some more liberal circles, they didn't like the idea of Shlomo Karbach. So there's a lot of people who don't really like that whole entire style of davening, though, as you mentioned, this has become popular not just in your immediate shul, but certainly within aspects of the modern Orthodox community. And I'm pretty sure, if I recall correctly, you could go to, you know, standard Haredi shuls, and, you know, whether they call it a Karbach Shabbos or not, whatever it might be, there's dancing, there's clapping. The first time I read the Mishnah in Beitza, I'm like, wait a minute, it's usher to do that on Shabbos and Yom Tov? And then, of course, I went down the rabbit hole, but the Michas Elazar did it way before I did, and a way better job. So, Rabbi Lashem, so do you want to tell us a little bit about the Michas Elazar? What's the issue with dancing on Shabbos and Yontif? Because before we explain why it's mutter, we have to first figure out why it's usser.
Why it's an issue at all.
Right.
Okay, so the Mishnah in Beitza, Perek Dalet, the second Mishnah, lists a number of things that are asur mishum shvut, things that are prohibited by Chazal, rabbinic prohibitions on Shabbat. And amongst the list is lo mitapchim velo misapkim velo merakdim. So mitapchim is probably clapping hands. Misapkim is maybe clapping your hands onto your thighs or something, a similar kind of action. And merakdim is dancing. And the Gemara there explains that the problem is it's basically a gezeira shema yitaken kli shir, that a person might come from this sort of semi-musical activity to make a musical instrument, which would be a clear violation of tikkun kli, of making a vessel on Shabbat, and therefore this was prohibited.
So there isn't just an isser simply of playing an instrument, because maybe you'll come to adjust it and fix it, but there's even almost like a gezeira le gezeira going on over here, that you shouldn't even dance and clap. Shema, you might pick up an instrument, and Shema, you might then have to fix it.
Or maybe you'll make an instrument from scratch. Now, the Minchas Elazar is going to talk about that distinction. There is a chiluk made between making a new vessel and fixing an existing vessel. But I'll come to that in a minute when I describe his methodology a little bit. Mm-hmm. Okay, but that's the issue. Now, how did earlier sources deal with it? The Rambam basically continues to say that it's usur. Some of the Gaonim point out that it's permissible on Simchat Torah, because on Simchat Torah, the dancing is lichvod haTorah, in honor of the Torah. And if a person's involved in honoring the Torah, they're not going to forget and do something prohibited. That's the theory behind that. The Shulchan Aruch following the Rambam basically leaves it as asur. And that's why you see people, especially Litvish people, clapping with a shinui that they won't forget and go from that to...
That's me. I do that. Okay. When I have to. I don't want to be punishment at Tzibor, so I'll do that begrudgingly. Okay. But so this is what's interesting, right? So the Magen Avraham quotes the Maharik, who quotes Rav Haigon, who says that there actually is an ancient practice already to dance on Simchas Torah. So yeah. How do we make – this isn't just like some new thing that some breakaway from Judaism decide to reform things. This is on the books in the times of the Gaonim at very least, and it's at odds with an explicit Mishnah.
Right, and well, let's continue with our survey of the Rishonim. The Toso, which is very important for us, come along and say, Ein anu biki'im ba'asiyat kli shir. We don't know how to make musical instruments these days, and therefore the gezerah, the prohibition, no longer applies. Now that's problematic, because we know there's a whole principle that even if a reason for a gezerah doesn't apply anymore, generally speaking, the gezerah is still on the books. Rav Moshe talks about that in Igrot Moshe here. But what's important and most important for us is the Ramah here. The Ramah, obviously, as Ashkenazim, the Ramah brings two reasons to permit what apparently in his time was already fairly common, it seems like. Firstly, he says, Mutiv shiu shogin v'lo yu mezidim. It's better for people are dancing or clapping. They're not going to listen to us, so maybe better not to tell them, and at least it'll only be a vera b'shogeg, not a purposeful prohibition. And then he says, or maybe we hold like the Tosfot that we don't know how to make a klishir these days, so therefore the prohibition is not applicable. Either way, it's pretty bitty of it, right? It's either, better that they do it b'shogeg than b'mezid, or it's relying on a Tosfot, which is also somewhat problematic.
Right, that's what's amazing about how he codifies those two suggestions of Tosfos, and either one is a radical suggestion. Either everyone is sinning, and better just not to take up the fight because it's not worth it, people won't listen, and which that's pretty damning for those who want to do that as a religious experience, who are supposedly firmer doing it. And then the other option is either to say, no, it's completely permissible because the impetus for the gezeirah no longer applies. And that also is something which is radical. So either way you slice it, we don't really have a comfortable heter here, as you said.
Exactly. So this is where the Minchat Elazar steps in, and he wants to, and to read the title of the tshuva, just which you I think you mentioned it briefly, is how is it that Hasidim and people of great merit dance and do this on Shabbat and they don't worry about this Isser? Okay, so I'm not going to read from the Chu. I just want to quote one line, which is very long. And he also goes off in some long, detailed, interesting tangents. For example, about playing musical instruments on Chol HaMoed, which he brings a achron that prohibited, which he thinks is really outlandish. But that's really a tangent. But he does say one thing here, and he says that the Mishnah in Beitza doesn't see dancing on Shabbat as being any kind of a mitzvah, which would be maybe a mitigating factor. And maybe that's what came in on Simchat Torah as the mitigating factor, lichvod haTorah. But he says the following interesting thing. Rak Hashem Simchat Yom Tov Asher Hinchalnu. Avalo lekol adam hu tircha ve'eino simcha shel mitzvah imein choshek la. Basically says there are two types of people when it comes to dancing on Shabbat and Shul. There are the people who are filled with a burning fire inside them, the fire of Hashem and the joy of Yontif, and they can't control themselves. And for them, apparently, he's going to prove that it is a mitzvah. That's going to be his goal. But he says there are other people that getting up, they'd rather just sit there, you know, to get up and have to dance around is a tircha for them. It's a burden, and they would rather skip it. He says for those people, it's definitely not a mitzvah. So it's an interesting way to, early on in the tshuva, that he's making this distinction that basically the heter that he is going to find in the end, after a long analysis, is really going to be only for someone who feels emotionally inspired, spiritually inspired to get up and dance, although he is going to essentially apply that to all the Hasidim who follow their rabbis and join in the common practice in the Hasidic and today neo-Hasidic shuls and dance around and clap their hands without a shinui, and that those people are going to be, in a sense, elevated into the category of those people who have this burning desire to serve Hashem joyfully, and for them it becomes a mitzvah, which is a mitigating factor. And here you have the Hasidic element of the tshuva, because essentially religious fervor or the religious experience or the mystical experience, if you will, the desire for some achievement of dveikut becomes a mitigating factor in a halachic discussion, which would not be true for a non-Hasidic posek by and large.
Right.
In general, before we get into the details of how he does that. Yeah.
Right. I think your point's well taken. And this is something I've noticed in the Minchas Elazar especially, but I think in broader Hasidic methodology, they'll take something which is generally, if you look at the sources, you know, not sitting the Sukkah on Shmini Atzeres, he has a tshuva on that one as well, which it would seem is sinful to ignore what it says in explicit Gemara and Shulchan Aruch. And not only will they be matzdik, not only will they justify, but they'll go on the offensive and they'll even say, no, it's not just simply we're allowed to dance. We're holier and therefore we dance. And when you look at the language over here, like you just read, initially it sounds very diplomatic. It sounds like, look, you know, those who like to dance and that's how they serve God, good for them. Those who aren't into it, they have other ways, elu ve'elu. But then his proof is that he turns to the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, he quotes the Rambam, that it wasn't just, you know, the Stam Amaretz like me who was going to be there dancing. It was the Gedolei Chachamim Yisrael Bar Rasha Yeshiva Sanhedrin V'chassidim V'zakeim Anshei Maisa. It actually says, if you're on a higher madrega, you're right. Going to be dancing on Shabbos and Yom Tov. So he really flips it on his head. He takes what is seemingly ostensibly an Aveira and turns it into a mitzvah.
So I do want to say one thing that my friend Rabbi Levi Cooper points out to fight strongly is the Minchat Elazar was perhaps the greatest defender of Minhagim in his era. That compared to, for example, the Mishnah Berurah had no trouble overturning Minhagim when it went against the written sources, or as opposed to even the Aruch HaShulchan, who defended Minhagim by finding sources. The Minhag Elazar went to great extremes to do very creative, let's say, hermeneutics or halachic reasoning in order to defend Minhagim, and you mentioned Shmini Atzeret and the Sukkah and many others, and this would fall into that category as well. So as you mentioned, yes, he basically does a radical hermeneutical move of turning the average Hasid dancing on Shabbat and Yom Tov into the kind of a Yichidei Skula that were described in the Rambam at the end of Hilchot Lulav as the people who would dance in Simchat Beit HaShoeva, and basically therefore elevates their whole dance to a kind of Simcha Shel Mitzvah, which is, again, similar to what we would say about Simchat Torah, apparently, and therefore mitigates against the fear of Tikkun Kli. Another thing that he does talk about at some length, and it's really interesting also historical context, is he asks, why is this dancing on Shabbat any better than the reformers, who obviously he was absolutely opposed to, right? If he's opposed
he
to Buddha.
He didn't like the Agudas Yisrael. He definitely didn't like that.
Right? And Mizrahi, so obviously reform, who had, and I think in his context, it's more the neologue, who is, you know, Hungarian, who had introduced the use of organs in the shul on Shabbat and Yom Tov, and the use of a musical instrument is the same prohibition as dancing. It's the same Mishnah, basically. It's the same reason. Shema Yitakein Kli. There he does make the distinction, which is quite logical, and he's certainly not his chiddush, between playing an existing instrument where you are, like, let's say you're playing a guitar and the string breaks. So if you're a guitar player, you know how to fix the string. It's not such a big deal. Whereas if you're dancing and singing without any musical accompaniment, then it's much less like you're going to somehow sit down from scratch and build a guitar or build a piano. Most people don't know how to do that. Whereas opposed to if I'm playing an organ in shul, and something breaks and I know how to fix it, I might very well do that. So he does make that distinction between what we do and what the reformers do, even though
I think that's actually a logical distinction. It sits well with me on an abstract, logical level. But I think the issue categorically is that, as you mentioned, Chazal, for the same reason, ossered all of these things. So from a halachically formalistic level, what right do we have to go into the minds of Chazal and say this one was made al tanai, this one had a built-in stipulation, and the other one didn't, especially when they are kind of classified together from the standpoint of the Talmud?
Yeah, it is a big chiddush, but he's not the first to say it, and it makes a certain kind of logic on the practical sense. You know, I think we'd all agree it's easier to fix a guitar string than to build a guitar. But maybe here we'll jump to a more up-to-date, personal and halachic. I, for many, many, many years, worked very, very closely with Rav Yehuda Herzl Henkin Zatzal at Nishmat, the author of the four volumes of the Tshuvot B'nei Banim. And he has a tshuva in the first volume. He has a long tshuva, which is not on exactly the same case. It's about banging on glasses and dishes along with Zmirot on Shabbat. So it's sort of similar, but I'm not clapping my hands. I'm banging the spoon on the side of a glass, for example, which he saw that a certain Rav had permitted in none of his tshuvas. He never tells you who he's responding to. And he took the initiative to write a long tshuva of why this is asur. And he as well mentions the distinction between making new vessels and fixing old ones, but he doesn't accept that. He mentions the Minhat Elazar, and he does not accept the idea that anything that's done for Simcha and Shabbat and Yom Tov is the same as Kavod HaTorah. The Heter for Simcha Torah, he writes that Kavod HaTorah specifically means Kavod Sefer HaTorah, and not Kavod HaTorah in a broader way. And he comes out very, very machmir on this. He leaves regular clapping as kind of mutiv shiyu shogegim sort of thing. Dancing, he held that the way we walk around in shul is not considered dancing because you have always one foot on the ground, and he himself would do that as well. But he thought that banging on a spoon on the side of the glass was much more like a musical instrument than that was a new heter that he strongly prohibited. Now, I will point out that many times I was with him on Shabbat at events at Nishmat, and I would be chazan for Kabbalat Shabbat, and he would not allow me to not clap, not bang on the table, nothing. I had to be, you know, very straight Litvish chazan when I was in his presence, and he knew that was sort of hard for me as something coming from a more Hasidic background and style of davening. And he'd always give me a nice big yasher koch and a smile after davening, almost, I think, to say that I'm getting schar ala prisha, that I'm, you know, getting some reward for the fact that I held back from what I would wanted to do out of kavod for him, which of course I had great, great kavod for him.
That's remarkable. I didn't really know. I guess I always assume Rav Henkin, of course, came from that kind of Litvish tradition, and he certainly held to it as well. So I actually wanted to get your take on this. There are Gemaras that seem to push in a different direction, not just for halachic reasons, but for hashgafic reasons. So here we have the Mechas Elazar who's making this argument about how the dancing, the clapping, the fervor is all in pursuit of the religious experience. Unlike Rav Henkin and others who just left Rav Hai going where it was and left it strictly for Kavod Sefer Torah, the Mechas Elazar extrapolates and says this isn't a begrudging heter or mutav shu shogin, but actually it doesn't have to be Kavod Torah, it can be Kavod Yontif, it can be Kavod Shabbos, and we can extrapolate more broadly to general Avodas Hashem. So I guess the question I always wonder, and again, I'm a card-carrying litvak. In your machlokis, I probably am much more on the Rav Henkin side, just where I land. Something that's, you know, I thought about is, I think it's a Gemara, I forget where, maybe in Sanhedrin. It's talking about Shir Shirim in particular, but many seem to expand it beyond it, in which the Torah is Choger Sak, and it comes before HaKadosh Baruch Hu lamenting, saying, Asuni Banecha Kikinur Shemenagdin Boleitzim, your children have turned me into this instrument that's going to be used to entertain themselves. And basically using psukim from Tanakh, using sacred words from the Chumash from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so that I can have fun at a concert on Chol HaMoed at a Pesach program. Mm-hmm. So how do we know, what is the litmus test for determining, according to the Hasidic approach, when is it using the Torah as a way of serving ourselves? This is very Yishai Leibovich. He's written a lot about that. Yeah. How do we know when we are using it in order to elevate and toward Avodas Hashem? And I can imagine that in many minyanim, there can be some people who are there more for the Avodas Hashem, and there's some people who just really love a Karmach Shabbos. They really love the concert. So how do you determine when it's Lishma, when it's Shalom Lishma, and that it actually meets the threshold of Kavod HaTorah?
That's a wonderful and important question. And I refer everyone to the book that came out recently from the Orthodox Union, Orthodox Forum, about uses and something, I forget the title exactly, about Neo-Hasidism, uses and misuses maybe, certainly that's some of the articles talk about it. And you have some correspondence on this topic between Rav Shagar and Rav Lichtenstein, or actually really more writing of Rav Lichtenstein attacking Rav Shagar, who was one of my I studied by both of them, Baruch Hashem. This is a huge question in Avodah Hashem, and certainly today. And I think obviously, the breakdown between the Litvish and here, Leibovitz is the extreme, of course, on the one hand, and the more Hasidic approach is very, very significant. And for lack of time to really have a long discussion about it, I would point to the Rebbe who I have done most research on, and in many ways very, very close to terms of my own avoda, which is the Piasechner Rebbe. And the piece Rav Kalanim is Kalma Shapira, different Shapira, no relation to the Minchas Elazar. And he, throughout his books, really, where he stresses more than anything else the importance of being emotional in Avodat Hashem. I think if I had to pick one word to sum up his whole approach, it would be regesh, be emotions. And he, in various places, gives us what I would say is a heter to strive for devekut through emotional religious experience. In other words, he basically would not accept her question to begin with. That's, I think, his answer, is that, yes, there is obviously is an approach that would say that we have to be erring on the side of caution of, let's say, spiritual integrity, not intellectual integrity, spiritual integrity, and asking ourselves all the time that question that Leibowitz always asks us, and it's important to keep us, you know, honest, so to speak, is, you know, are you really doing Avodat Hashem, or are you doing some kind of Avodah Zorah of self-service? Mm-hmm. And that's a real question, and it's a question that everyone has to ask themselves all the time, and not only about dancing on Shabbat, about lots and lots of things. But obviously, when you take on something new that's beyond halacha or questionable within halacha in any way, then obviously it becomes a more acute question. But the Piasechner, basically, bottom line is that the most important thing for us is to feel a strong emotional connection with Hashem, and that's okay. And we shouldn't get bogged down in the question of, well, am I really totally lishma, or maybe something here is just because it feels good. Maybe it feels good for me, you know, to dance on Shabbat, and it makes me feel good that I'm feeling close to Hashem, but is it real? And he says, if you feel that way, that it's real, then there is something there of religious significance, and the religious slash mystical experience of feeling some kind of dveikut with Hashem through something like, for example, dancing. And the possession we know even went beyond that and did somersaults that he writes about in his diary, for example. That which is
emulating David HaMelech.
Right,
not very much somersaults,
so. Yes.
But
yes, yeah, he alludes to David HaMelech in that piece in his diary. That is a legitimate approach, and I would then go on and going, you know, living today. Although I always, what first attracted me very much to the Piasecki was how much his description of religious life and educational problems in Poland in the 1930s was so similar to what was going on in Israel or in America in the end of the 20th and beginning of 21st century. If we want to keep our kids connected strongly to Yiddishkeit today, then it needs to be a religion where one feels joy and connection and meaningful, where, well, the Piasecki says in one of his diary posts that people need to get emotional thrills or else they'll become sick. And you can get them from one of three places, from averas, which is obviously we don't want, from neutral things, like I don't know, going on a roller coaster, which is okay, but it's not the great, or from passion and emotional excitement in your religious life. So therefore, if you're davening, and if we give our kids davening and learning and kiyum mitzvot full of joy and excitement, that will give them the emotional thrills, so to speak, that everyone's neshama needs. And that will hopefully help to keep them connected to Yiddishkeit in a way that, sorry here to come out, that a more drier, perhaps Litvish approach in this context of this discussion may have trouble with. Now, I realize there are problems in the other direction as well,
right?
But that's the side I would come out on.
Right, and I appreciate you articulating that. I do want to dispel a notion, you know. I think it was Rav Shach, they said that his son went off the derech, which I think meant just he became modern Orthodox. But from their standpoint, it was off the derech. And this is a story that they tell all the time, that they asked him what happened. He said, oh, I didn't sing enough zmiras with him at the table. Now, I don't think anyone would ever accuse Rav Shach of being overly Hasidish and not Litvish enough. So I think even in the Litvish belt, and you see there's a lot of cross-pollination, you'll see things that kind of Malava Malkas that resemble Tishes. There's been a lot of cross-pollination in that respect. But so I think also your point about the Hasidic approach, about the emphasis on emotions well taken, I think what's unique about the circumstance in Minchas Elazar is that the stakes are higher. It's that the whole heter is built upon the premise that one is doing it l'shem kavod haTorah or l'shem kavod yontif, and that's why the stakes are a little bit higher, and that's why it might be a little bit more, a jump too high for many in the more Litvish welt. So let me ask you a question, just because we're drawing toward a close. Is there anything else just about the Minchas Elazar, his methodology, or just general Hasidish methodology that you want to leave our listeners with?
So I think that what we see here, and this is maybe is the bottom line, why this is an interesting tshuva besides the technical and creative analysis of the sources, is that what makes it a Hasidic tshuva is the willingness to take into account the religious experience or the mystical experience as a value, which is then elevated to a, let's say, not another source, but another it's elevated to being like a halachic value. And as we're weighing here through this tshuva back and forth between the various sources and svaras that are lahatir or lesor, then here's another one, that if people are serving Hashem in their understanding because of their passionate desire to do so through dancing, that religious experience becomes a value which is taken seriously. You know, it's the opposite of if Leibovich would have considered it a avodah zarah, and maybe a straight more, and Rav Henkin would consider it. Rav Henkin uses a phrase, by the way, in his tshuva about banging a spoon on a glass. He calls it simcha haba'a ba'avera.
Ooh, that's a
so,
good one.
You know, right.
Yeah, that's pocketing that
phrase.
One.
Simcha ba'a ba'avera. So that would be the more, you know, the Litvish approach to, you know, okay, you know, it's very good to be have simcha and avodat Hashem, but there are very clear halachic guidelines, and they must be be kept. And the fact that this makes you feel good is not going to become a value that's going to have any significance in my decision. Whereas for the Minchat Elazar, the experience of the Chassid as feeling a state of Dveikut or striving for a state of Dveikut with Hashem through expressing joy becomes part of the equation that's worked through in determining the final answer. And that's what makes it a Hasidic approach to halacha.
Thank you. And I think this was an excellent choice, as you just articulated. It's very emblematic of the unique Hasidic approach in dealing with halachic issues. And the Munkacher is just a great example of someone who had the mastery, of course, of Hasidus, and also the same mastery of the halachic literature that you would expect from any also non-Hasidic posek. And so I want to thank you very much for your time, Rabbi Dr. Leshem. It's such a joy. I know we've been in touch like kind of on social media a little bit for a while. It's such a joy to learn from you directly now. I wish you much enjoyment, much hatzlacha with your retirement. Of course, I'm confident it's not going to be a true retirement. I'm sure you're going to find many different ways beyond to contribute to the knowledge and experience of the Jewish people. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu should bless you with many more chances and capacities to do that in.
I mean, Chodesh Tov, and you should all have
a good Chodesh. Thank you for listening to Shoot First, Ask Questions Later. Please make sure to subscribe to get the latest updates. And if you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to rate us and leave a review. Do you have a response to the response that you want to share on the show? Please send your letter to the editor to MitchellMKurtz@gmail.com. And God willing, we would love to consider your perspective to be shared on a future episode. This is Moshe Kurtz, and I look forward to reviewing more responses with you next time on Shoot First, Ask Questions Later.